Jen and Cam are two funny ladies who like to talk about murder, mass murder, murder-suicide, serial killers, spree killers, thrill killers, contract killings, honor killings, and a whole lot of other shit. Too heinous for me to list here. If you're disturbed by this sort of content, you may want to listen to something else. And if you're a child trying to listen to our true crime podcast, well, you better ask your mama.
Hi, Jen.
Hey, Cam, how are you?
I am pretty good. It's cloudy here, and that makes me happy.
Ooh, yes, it is very cloudy.
I like it. You know?
It's supposed to, yeah.
Not raining or anything, but I'll take it.
Not yet. Is it supposed to?
Nope, I don't think so.
I don't have a headache, so probably not.
Yep, I don't think so. Later this week.
Nope. Got something for us this week?
Jen. All right. You know, yes, I do. But let me just say, there's a lot to this. I watched a TV show called Bad Henry, and I was like, holy moly, I've never heard of this guy. So I went down that, but then getting into, there's just so much. So cue the sources at the end of this when it goes up, and you can go check this out, because it's, you could go down
a page. Yeah. In the show notes, I'm assuming? Yes. All the sources, like normal, like we
like
do?
Like normal, yes. But there's...
Awesome.
Yeah. So here we go.
Right.
You ready?
Well, I'm buckling in. Let's do it.
As little kids, we are scared of monsters and things that go bump in the night. We hear stories about big, scary, hairy creatures that will get you if you're not being good. So you made sure to always be good. You also made sure to be aware of your surroundings and, of course, the old stranger danger. We grew up like that, and we imagine that bad guys are the ones in the movies. But what if the monster was nothing like that? What if they were kind and helpful? What if they were your good friend? What if the monster was hiding in plain sight? That's
nice.
That's that title. See?
Mm-hmm.
20-year-old Carolyn Love was reported missing on June 17, 1992. Carolyn had finished working at her shift at Bojangles Restaurant and had left just after midnight, and she was going to make the short walk home to her apartment that she shared with her friend Sadie. Now, when Caroline went missing, Caroline's sister Kathy, the roommate Sadie, and Sadie's boyfriend Henry went to police to file a missing persons report. Her friend, Shauna Hawk, worked with her at Bojangles as well. The two had become really close friends. They knew each other from high school, and then when they started working together, as is the case, you know, you end up hanging out more and becoming better friends. When the news broke that Carolyn was missing, Shauna was very upset. It was not like her friend to go missing without a word. Fast forward, September 19th, 1993, when 20-year-old Shauna Hawk woke up to get ready to go to her shift at Taco Bell. Shauna was new to Taco Bell, as she recently took the job because it paid more than her old job at Bojangles. Shauna is working and going to school, and she's determined to make something of herself and be successful. Shauna's mom, Dee, was a bit concerned due to the hours that she would have to work and wanted to make sure that she'd stay on top of her homework. To ease her mind, Shauna's mom went to Taco Bell to speak with the manager who had hired Shauna. He was a young man by the name of Henry. Henry assured Shauna's mom that he would definitely look after her and she's going to do a great job. Now, on this particular day, Shauna was scheduled to pick up her godson from daycare and had failed to do so. When Dee arrived home from work, she noticed that Shauna's purse was at home and so was her coat, something that she would always wear in the chilly winter months. She knew something wasn't right. Dee spoke to Shauna's boyfriend, and when she learned he too had not seen or heard from Shauna, the boyfriend headed to the house where the two called police to report her missing. As Dee's on the phone, the boyfriend begins to look around the home. As he enters the bathroom, he is about to witness something no human should ever see. As he pulls back the shower curtain, he finds Shauna in the bathtub, fully clothed. Shauna was dead. Authorities arrive and attempt to do CPR, but it's too late. Due to the fact that it didn't look like a break-in, as in there was no broken windows or doors kicked in, police think that Shauna must have known her victim. Police determine the house a crime scene and start the investigation. Shauna had been raped and strangled. The person who did this to Shauna was sure to leave nothing behind. There were no fingerprints, no DNA, and no evidence. Shauna's missing car was the only thing they could go on, but it was nowhere to be found. It would be several weeks later when they finally found her car. It was parked in a parking garage at Central Piedmont Community College. The car, or should I say the seat in the car, would provide their first clue. Shauna was not very tall, and the seat had been pushed all the way back, indicating that the person who drove the car last was tall. Not much to go on, but it's something. 4 months after the murder of Shauna Hawk, 24-year-old Audrey Spain failed to show up at her job at Taco Bell. Yeah, the same Taco Bell that Shauna worked. The manager, Henry, had phoned home to say that Audrey did not report to her shift that day. Worried for her, they called the apartment complex where she lives and asked the manager to enter the apartment to check on her. You know, a welfare check by the manager. He found Audrey deceased on her bed. Audrey had been raped and strangled, just like Shauna. Working on the timeline of when she was last heard from, they believe she had been murdered at least 2 days earlier. The killer had cranked down the air conditioner to as low as it would go to slow down decomposition. It's becoming increasingly clear that there's a killer at work, but what police do not yet know is if these are connected.
They all work at fast food, right?
They do. In September of 1993, a call comes in to police from a friend who went to visit her 20-year-old friend, Michelle Stinson. Upon arriving to the apartment, the friend knocks on the door and no one answers. He looks in the window, where he can clearly see one of Michelle's little boys playing. The boys come to the window and they tell the friend that mommy's sleeping on the floor. The friend talks the little boy into letting him in the apartment, and he goes and walks through the apartment to see what he can find. It's there that he locates Michelle, dead on the floor. Michelle had been brutally murdered right in front of her two babies. Aww. She had been stabbed 4 times in the back, but showed signs of attempted strangulation. Once again, there are no signs of forced entry, indicating that Michelle probably had to know who killed her. With police getting no closer to finding the person responsible for their daughter's death, Shauna Hawk's mom writes a letter to the killer and had it published in the paper, the Charlotte Observer. Dee had begged the person to come forward, and if so, they would receive forgiveness and end the parent's suffering. And let me just say here, Dee is amazing. Woo! What a powerhouse. She's amazing.
I guess the police didn't, like, interview the kids. I guess they're so little.
They were little bitty. Sadly, in the same paper, another family would be suffering, too, as an article mentions the body of a 25-year-old named Vanessa Little Mack, who was found murdered in her apartment. Vanessa's babysitter would come to her apartment to pick up her 4-month-old baby. She babysat while Vanessa worked. The babysitter entered the home and called out to her. When Vanessa didn't answer, she walked through the apartment and found Vanessa dead. Once again, she was killed in front of her young baby, and her cause of death was strangulation. Her ATM card was gone, and police determined that someone had tried to use it. In what was a brilliant move on her part, Vanessa gave the killer the incorrect PIN for the ATM card.
Good for her.
I wouldn't even think about that. He was unable to get any money. However, the bank camera footage did give them a little bit more info. The person who attempted to use her ATM was a black man who was wearing a hat. Now, they couldn't see his face, but what they could see was an earring in his ear. He wore a dangly cross, like cross, earring. It wasn't much, but it was something. So they're getting a little, few to little details, but it's something.
Still better than what they had.
At this point, Charlotte residents are not happy with police. They want to know who is attacking these beautiful young black women in their homes. Rumblings were starting and asking if people were doing enough or working hard enough to find the killer. I didn't go into this issue a whole lot, but there's so much on it, and we'll talk about that at the end. But this was, it's something.
Is this how some police don't regard the black population?
I believe, and that's what some parents had said, and just
wrong.
It was about to get worse, Jen, and I mean much, much worse. The Lakes apartment complex It's March 9th, 1994, when 18-year-old mother Brandy Henderson calls her cousin, asking him to come and hang out with her since her boyfriend was working. He'd work later into the evening, like midnight or one. Her cousin was on the phone with Brandy when there was a knock on the door. After telling the visitor to come in, Brandy tells the person to lock the door behind you. This meant that Brandy trusted this person and wanted to make sure that she too would not become a victim of this killer that was preying on the women in North Carolina, in Charlotte. Her cousin declined her offer to come over, but felt comfortable that someone was there with her that evening until her husband could arrive home. When Brandy's boyfriend returned home after work, the lights are all off, which was odd since she usually left them on for him. When he turned on the lights, it becomes clear that someone had been in the apartment and ransacked it. His stereo was gone, as well as a can. I think it was a Pringles can that Brandy kept spare change in. She'd just throw her change in there, you know, when she got home from the day or whatever. As he makes his way through the house, he checks on his son, 10-month-old Tyrese. He noticed that the baby's not making a sound, and he finds material tied around the baby's neck. He works fast to free the baby, and in a fevered pace, he goes in to check on Brandy. Brandy was on the bed. She had a ligature still placed around her neck, but she was gone. The killer had not only killed Brandy, but this time he attempted to kill that sweet baby boy. The very next day, they're still working this murder scene at the Lake Apartments, Jen.
Still right? Today?
No, I'm continuing on my next paragraph.
Okay.
Just
checking.
They're still working this murder scene at the Lake Apartments.
I was going to say, that's incompetence right there. But,
well, yeah, well, takes a few of them to get what they need.
30 years.
The very next day, another call comes in regarding yet another body found at the very same Lake Apartments. That's brave.
Two.
Brave. Right, back to back. The woman is 24-year-old Betty Jean Balcom, and she worked at Bojangles Restaurant as well. Whoever killed Betty stole her car, so the police needed to find her car fast. It doesn't take long as her car is parked in a parking lot directly across from the Lake Apartments. What they could not know yet was that the car would hold a valuable piece of evidence. That spare change jar that was Brandy's, that was stolen from her apartment, is in that car.
Now are they connecting?
It is definite. Thank you. It is definite. The two murders are now connected, and that means there is a serial killer targeting young women in Charlotte. Police were able to lift a palm print off the car. Thank goodness. So police are rushing to get this killer off the street. The public's panicking, as you can imagine. The media is going crazy with the story. Sadly, there would be one more. Just 2 days later, 35-year-old Deborah Ann Slaughter's body was found about a mile away from the Lake Apartments in her apartment complex, Glen Hollow Apartments. She was on her back on the living room floor. This happened to be the same complex that Audrey Spain had lived in. Deborah was also employed by Bojangles. Now, the crime scene was slightly different than the others as Deborah fought furiously for her life. Thankfully, this killer's rampage was about to end. As police are interviewing Brandy's boyfriend, they ask him who would Brandy feel comfortable letting into the apartment? Who would she feel safe enough to let in when it was only her and the baby? He provides them with a short list of names. They are confident that on this list is their killer. So they run criminal background checks on all the men that the boyfriend had given them, and one comes back with a record. A man named Henry Lewis Wallace. And what officers notice in his mugshot sends chills down their spine. I got chills too, I tell you. In his ear, Jen, was a dangling gold cross earring. The same kind of earring that the man who attempted to use the ATM was sporting. Since he had been arrested before, that also means that they have his prints on file. Bam! That palm print that they lifted belongs to no one else but Henry Wallace.
Hey everyone, Cam and I are so excited to announce that we're going to be at the Dark History and Horror Convention in Champaign, Illinois on August 19th and 20th this year, 2022. The folks behind the Dark History and Horror Convention have brought together a great collection of authors, artists, and many others who are familiar with the darker parts of history that most of us were never taught in history class. From Native American massacres to civil rights struggles, From gangsters to John Wayne Gacy, this convention is the perfect place to share your passion with others who are interested in the dark side of history and pop culture.
Attending with us is our friend podcaster Bob Mata from Defense Diaries. And along with him is EJ Hammond. Not only did she write a few episodes for us, but she is an expert on Ted Bundy. You can also meet Jason London, better known as Randall Pink Floyd from Dazed and Confused, and his brother Jeremy London, who I'm sure you know from Mallrats and Gods and Generals. And from Terminator, John Connor himself, Edward Furlong, who was amazing in American History X. There's so many more guests and vendors that we can't even mention them all here.
So hurry up and get your tickets and make sure to follow Dark History and Horror Convention on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We know you're not going to want to miss this event. So hurry now and get your tickets, and we'll see you in Champaign, Illinois on August 19th and 20th at the Dark History and Horror Convention.
It's March 12, 1994, when police arrest Henry Wallace and bring him into the station for questioning. At first, Henry plays dumb and claims he had nothing to do with any of this. It's all a big mistake. I don't know what you guys are talking about. Different detectives were taking turns trying to get him to break. All that good cop, bad cop talk, you know, wasn't working on him. He was too smart for it. So he says. What eventually did cause him to break was not a man, but an action. Detective Tony Rice comes in and he sits down. But unlike the other detectives who would just dive right in and question him and badger him to get him to try to confess, he starts and he calmly asks Henry if before they started to question the questioning, could they say a prayer together? That was all it took. After the prayer, Rice asked him to tell him what happened. Henry asked for a piece of paper. Henry Lewis Wallace was born November 4, 1965 in Barnwell, South Carolina. His mother, Lottie May, got involved with a man who was married, and when she told him she was pregnant, he pulled that old magic trick and disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
After he was born, his mom worked in a textile factory. She worked long and hard hours, but she was very strict with her son. Sometimes, too strict, some would say. In high school at Barnwell High School, he was popular and well-liked by all his classmates. He was active in school, even becoming a cheerleader, which was a first for the school, a male cheerleader. He was also elected to student council, and he did pretty well grade-wise. He graduated in 1983, and he kind of tried college, but it wasn't for him. So in 1985, he joined the Navy. In 1987, he would marry his high school girlfriend, Marietta, and then finish out his service in 1988. In January 1988, Wallace was arrested for breaking into a hardware store. This was the charge that had shown up on his record where he was fingerprinted. He was convicted and sentenced to 2 years probation. Henry and his wife would eventually divorce. Henry then started working in managerial positions in fast food restaurants, namely Bojangles. Taco Bell.
Oh, there you go.
Henry Wallace would give a full confession and describe in detail what he did to these women. The unusual part was that Henry was friends with these women. They trusted him. They let him in, and he killed them. He had said to the police that in his mind, when he made up his mind that they were his next victim, they were gone. Nothing they could say or do would change it. They were already gone. Now, on that piece of paper that he asked for from the police, he began writing. As Henry is writing the names of all the women he murdered, police are not shocked because they knew that they had the right man. What they are shocked about is that the list contains way more than they knew about.
Oh, 10. Henry's been busy.
10 women, in fact. 10 that he admitted to, let's put it that way. Some of these women, police didn't even know that they were missing or murdered. It's news to them. One of the women on the list is 20-year-old Caroline Love. Now, Caroline was the young woman that we mentioned at the top of the show. She was also the one that worked with Shauna Hawk. Police were unaware that she had been murdered or even missing. Now, if you remember, her sister, her roommate, Shauna, and her roommate's boyfriend all had went in to police to report her missing. But remember that boyfriend? His name was Henry. Henry was her roommate's boyfriend. He was also this man right here.
Mm-hmm.
Henry tells detectives that he raped and strangled her and dumped her out in the woods. During his confession, he tells police that he was actually at the household comforting them, the Love household, with the parents, comforting them and making missing posters for Caroline. The nerve of him. You ready? Here we go. This is it. So he's there at Caroline's parents' house making missing posters with the family. When he was
pretending like nothing happened, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But here's the thing. When he was there making those posters with the family, the police arrived because they wanted to talk to the family. They wanted to get some more information. When the police were there, her family had told them, the police, that she was last seen wearing her Bojangles uniform. Now, this uniform, mind you, is bright orange. Henry knew right then and there that he needed to go back to where he had dumped her body and take that uniform off to avoid detection. So he was there, he got that information, and he went and took that uniform because it was bright orange and in the woods, she would be found.
You'd see it, exactly.
Now, however, we started the show with her, but she was not the first. She was actually his second victim. Another one of the names on the list is 21-year-old Valencia Jumper, who police thought at the time died in an apartment fire. What they didn't know was that the fire was set by Henry to cover up her murder. Henry raped her and killed her. He then opened a can of beans, like pork and beans or baked beans, put them on the stove and turned the burner on high. He then poured liquid all around her lifeless body and left. Henry was friends with Valencia's sister. In fact, he would say he looked at her like a little sister.
Oh, Jesus.
Valencia was his fifth victim. Yet another one was 18-year-old Tashonda Bethel, who lived in his old hometown of Barnwell. One day, Henry would say that Tashonda was walking along the road when he spotted her and picked her up, enticing her with the promise of scoring some weed. Henry would dump her body in a lake. On April 1st, 1990, 2 weeks after she went missing, her body was located by a couple out fishing. She, too, had been strangled. Henry was, in fact, brought in for questioning regarding her murder, but he denied it, and without much to link him to it, he was let go.
He's
free to go.
Wow.
It's believed
so close
that she was his first victim. After this, getting questioned by police, I'm sure he was a little scared, so he hightailed it, and he moved to North Carolina, Charlotte, to be exact, which is, sadly, where his murdering continued. During his 12-hour confession, he would say that he hated his ex-wife, and had he stayed in South Carolina, he would have killed her. In fact, as he was killing his victims, he said, he would often visualize his ex-wife on their faces. He also said the fact that he killed two in the same day was what caught him, that it was his mistake. Okay, Henry. Henry Lewis Wallace would be charged and convicted in 9 of the murders.
Only 9? He was convicted of only 9?
9. But he did 10. But that's right. Actually
they
a lot.
They just couldn't get him on the last one.
Right.
I'd be happy just if they got one. Just put his ass away.
So his trial began in September 96. In the opening arguments, the prosecutor, of course, argues staunchly for the death penalty, while his defense attorney would be asking for a life sentence. And they would say that Wallace was mentally ill, and that these weren't actually first-degree murders, so says his defense attorney, because he didn't really premeditate them. He was friends with them, and it was just kind of a thing. But if you take his word for it, he said once it was in his head, they were as good as gone. They were done. There was nothing that they could do. They could beg
for
their life.
It's just a thing I do with friends. I just rape them and then murder them.
Brutally. Yeah. Many of them with their babies right there.
Yeah.
I just cannot believe that. Psychologist Faye Sultan would take the stand and testify that it was pretty evident that he was a victim of physical and mental abuse from his mother. So said, they said she was strict on him. And because of this, he did suffer some mental illness. And she believed that he should get a life sentence instead of the death penalty. However, nope. On January 7th, 1997, Henry Wallace was found guilty of all the 9 murders. And on January 29th, he was sentenced to 9 death sentences. Following when he got his sentence, he would make a statement to the victim's family. And this is his statement. Quote, "None of these women, none of your daughters, mothers, sisters, or family members in any way deserved what they got. They did nothing to me that warranted their death," end quote. That's true because, you know what? They were your friend. They were your friend. They were trusted you. They hung out with you. That one poor little girl, he was best friends with her sister and said she was like my little sister. But when...
Yeah, that's... Unreal.
June 5th, 1998, he married a former prison nurse in a ceremony next to the execution chamber.
Oh, very romantic.
Since being sentenced to death in 97, he has been appealing the court to overturn the death sentences, and that has never happened. Thank goodness. In 2005, the Superior Court rejected his appeal to overturn the convictions, and albeit this moves him closer to, you know, serving his death sentence and actually dying.
Completing his sentence.
Yes.
Yeah.
As of today, no execution date has been set for the 56-year-old Henry Wallace, and he is currently housed in North Carolina's Central Prison. A couple things that I added on here. I'd mentioned that he was at the house for Caroline Love making missing posters when the police came, so he was there. He also went to Shauna Hawk's memorial service and comforted her mother. He hugged her. He hugged the mother of the young woman that he killed.
Yeah. Well,
they were there because of him. That I mean, that's a whole different level of cruel.
It's despicable, deplorable. I know.
So, you know, and this is all I said about this, but there's a whole bunch of, if I was like a psych law student, I would do a study on this because I think it's pretty interesting. The police department obviously received a ton of heat for not getting Henry earlier. When I first told you that I was writing about this, I said, remember, I said, you and I aren't the smartest, but I think one of the first things I would have noticed is that many of the victims worked at the same restaurant.
Right.
And start there. And that, I mean, they could have caught, you know, but I'm not a police officer. Just saying. Took them 10 deaths to figure it out. So Dee Sumner, who is Shauna Hawk's mom, the one that I said is absolutely amazing. She was a staunch fighter to get things changed, to get to the bottom of this. And what she said about the victims were, quote, "They weren't prominent people with social economic status. They weren't special, and they were Black." Yep. Deborah Slaughter's father also suggested that the investigation took a low priority because of the race, and most of them did not. They were either very young or they were young mothers, didn't make very much money. And he says, quote, "To me, the girls just weren't important to the police. They didn't live in a high-rent district. They weren't famous or known. They worked in fast food joints. And they didn't have blonde hair and blue eyes." At the time, Daryl Allen, a retired police officer from New York who was living in Charlotte during all this, called for dismissal of the police sergeant because he believed that had this been fixed from the get-go, that none of the other killings would have happened. The Caroline Love and Shauna Hawk, that would have ended many of the ones that came after that. And he says, quote, "Whether the problem is economic, racial, procedural, or managerial, this issue must be resolved so that all Charlatans can feel complete confidence in the law enforcement's ability to deal fairly and effectively with crime."
So what happened?
Well, they just, the police came out and said that they, you know, they tried their hardest. They were working the best they could. I think there was a crossover with not all the same detectives were placed on the same killing. So, for instance, there was a set of detectives looking at the ATM footage of the guy with the earring when another set of detectives knew that they had seen Henry with the earring. Do you see what I'm saying? So, it was
communication.
Almost like they weren't communicating enough. I mean, it was a lot, lots of press conferences.
You would think it's like, hey, Don and Larry have a case of a murdered girl that worked at Bojangles. Well, you know what? Frank and Bob have the same case. I wonder if they're connected. I mean, that's
kind of, to us, looking back. And like I said, I'm not a police officer. However, strangulated women in their homes, yeah, it's just not all that common. And when it's happening again and again in front of babies, and that poor little Tyrese, in the, I watched two TV shows, but one of it, bless his little heart, he's the cutest little thing ever. Because he's, you know, he's like a young adult now. He's married with children. And he, I mean, he doesn't remember anything about his mom. But Henry Wallace wanted to kill that 10-month-old. And it was because the baby wouldn't be quiet. Because the baby's 10 months old. That's why. So.
And it can feel this mother
stress,
going through stress.
Screaming and yelling. The one thing that the cousin, and I didn't write down his name in here, and I apologize. There was in one of the TV shows that I watched that will be in the sources. He said a couple days after Brandy, that was his cousin, the one that he called on the phone that said, make sure you lock the door behind you. He said that he went to go see a friend and Henry Wallace was at the friend's house. So there was like the three of them there. And he says that he's sitting there and he's getting ready to leave. And Henry was like, you know, she was a really good girl. I'm really sorry for your loss. And as he gets up to leave, Henry Wallace says, quote, make sure you lock the door behind you. And the cousin, I'm getting chills. The cousin's like, I knew right then and there. He did it. He did it. I knew it because that's what my cousin said. I knew it because he heard it on the phone. So it's almost in a way, and that's a bizarre thing to say. You know what I mean? It's not, you know, I don't know.
It's
almost like he
common,
wanted him to
but
know.
Not that common. Right.
Well, and it's almost kind of either like taunting him or, you know, saying that I don't know. But so anyway, the shows are Bad Henry, and then there's another one, and I'll put it in there, but they're good. And then, like I said, there's so much to this with the police not finding out and the pressure. Charlotte is not that big. I mean, it's not a small town, but it's not that big. There was some talk that some of them, and I didn't even want to go down that because you and I both know victim blaming or making excuses is not what we do. But there were some of them were on drugs. A little bit.
That doesn't matter.
It doesn't.
I mean,
exactly.
None of that matters.
And that's why I left it out. That doesn't matter. It's
reminds me of the Stephen Port from last week where it was incompetence of the police department. And that was systematic homosexual or homophobia, where this is systematic racism. So it has to be.
And I mean, many of the detectives working on the case were Black. But I think it was also funds, police funds, being able to, you know, find the money to dedicate the time and the overtime and all that for this. And
you would think if you have 10 women that are missing and found raped and brutally murdered, you
strangled
would put a little
the same way.
You would put a little time and effort and some cash into that. I mean, sure, I know you're strapped. You don't have any money, but you should find money. I mean, come on.
Oh, I know. That's why I can't believe that I was not aware of this
if
story.
If it was important, you find a way to do it.
And I would say, just like he had no, not that killers have scruples, but him murdering these moms, these young moms, and leaving them these children motherless. Like, and he's friends with all of them. He's friends with these people. And that's what shocks me, you know?
And
these
the police
strangers.
Didn't even put, he's the common denominator to all of them.
That's what I'm saying. So he was, you know, Caroline's boss, Caroline and Shauna's boss at Bojangles. Then he went to Taco Bell and brought Shauna over. Then Shauna goes missing. I don't think it takes a scientist to figure out maybe we need to talk to this guy. It's, you know.
You mean the guy with the dangle cross
the
earring?
Cross earring, correct.
Yeah, maybe.
So yeah. That's
horrible.
But the mom is amazing.
They were completely, those families were failed. The police failed them horribly. And it happens way too much.
I just don't. And, you know, that it took that long. And what they believe is his first victim with the fire, they just automatically said it was an apartment fire, right? And she died in that. But if you go.
And she had baked beans wrapped around her? Or
no, liquor. He poured liquor.
He poured liquor on
her. But also.
What did they just think she got drunk and poured liquor on her and
that's
set
what I'm
herself
saying.
On
like,
fire?
I don't think that was investigated very well.
I mean, I can get sloppy drunk, but that's probably going a little bit too far.
He was not, I was speaking of sloppy. That's what I didn't put in there. He made a lot of mistakes. Like, he just did a lot of stupid things and they still didn't catch him. They still didn't, you know, I just don't understand.
I don't either.
Breaks my heart. But there he is on death row still.
Well, what was the name of the show? Bad Henry was the
Bad
movie.
Henry was on ID.
Is that a documentary?
It's like an hour and a half, I think. And then the other one, I think it was just like a regular, I don't know. Like, just like a regular
crime investigation.
Yeah, just like a little 45-minute show or something. The Bad Henry's really good. And you feature a lot of the parents and things like that. And it'll give you a lot more about, this was the condensed version because these poor girls, ladies. I mean, his old victim was 35. To me, that's still a baby, you know?
It is a baby.
So
from where we're standing, that was still a baby. I was just starting to have my babies. So
That's what I'm saying. Anyway, so that is it. Henry Wallace is not a nice person. So I'll say it right now. Yeah, I'm pretty sure of it.
Well, I was contacted through Instagram through a friend of a missing person that has gone missing. I don't know if you've heard, Kylie Rodney. Mm-hmm. She's missing from Truckee, California. She and 200 or 300 other kids and young adults went to a party near the Prosser Family Campground. And that's in the Tahoe National Forest in California. Mm-hmm. She attended this party and everything was fine. She called her mother at, I guess, 12:30, said that she would be on her way home, and she's never made it home. And this happened the 5th of August, early month. They haven't found anything.
They haven't found her car?
Yet. Haven't found her car. Haven't
found
her.
Was she by herself?
She was driving home by herself. She was supposed to give another girl a ride home, but the girl didn't feel comfortable because Kylie did have a few or had been drinking.
The girl
get in the car, but she was driving a 2013 silver Honda CRV. So,
and the car hasn't been found either.
Car has not been found. She has not been found. She was wearing a black bodysuit with spaghetti straps, black Vans, I believe, green Dickie pants, and three gold necklaces. You know how the staggered of the gold necklaces. But yeah, people are on the lookout. If you know, have any information or anything, you're supposed to contact the police.
How old is she again?
She's 16. Oh. She's blonde. Let me see if I can find her. There's a $50,000 reward for her. They're searching reservoirs now as we speak. Divers are.
That was my next question.
Yes.
I was wondering if there was any bodies of water near the roads.
They've also have cadaver dogs out looking for her.
I hope that's not the case.
Yeah. Another thing I forgot she was wearing was a sweatshirt jacket with a Lana Del Rey quote on the front. It was black. It says, "You don't want to be forgotten. You just don't want to disappear." And it's got like a bunch of posies and everything on the back, I believe. Posies are violets. But if you know anything, you call the Placer County Sheriff's Department, our Sheriff's Office tip line at 530-581-6320, or email sheriff_tahoeinvesttips@placer.com.gov. Or if you need all this information, you can just go to findkelly.com and it will have the family set up that.
Kylie, find Kylie.
Find Kylie. And it's FINDKIELY. And it'll bring up all the information. There's pictures of her car. There's the tip line.
What color was her car? Do you know?
Silver. It was a silver Honda CRV 2013.
Okay.
She's 16 years old. She has blonde hair, hazel eyes. She's 5'7", 118 pounds. She has piercings and a tattoo on the ribs that says 17. She was last seen wearing green Dickies, a black string strap bodysuit, black Vans, and three gold necklaces. So if you go to findkeely.com, F-I-N-D-K.
Kylie or Keely?
See, it's Kylie. Sorry, it's findkylie.com. FINDKIELY. But anyway, it'll give you anonymous tip lines, where you can reach out, who to call. If you have any information, we just need to bring Kylie home.
Yes, we do. All
and right. They also have, I just saw this too. They also have a Find Me poster that you can download and hang up anywhere that you see fit that you can print out. to help them. That would be of help.
You see something or hear something, make sure you report it. Till next time. Remember, lock your doors.
And keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love ya.
Today's episode was researched and written by me, Cam. For more information about this episode, as well as all the sources I used, please check out our show notes or the podcast website at ourtruecrimepodcast.com. Our True Crime Podcast is developed and created by hosts Jen and Cam. Original music and audio mix of all our True Crime Podcast episodes is courtesy of Nico Vertese from We Talk of Dreams. Listener discretion is provided by Edward October from October Pod VHS. Our True Crime Podcast is executive produced by Nico Vertese and Dick Bain. Make sure to like and subscribe to Our True Crime Podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. We can be reached on Instagram and Facebook at Our True Crime Podcast or on Twitter at Our True Crime Pod. You can email us at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. If you really like the show, make sure to check out our Patreon at Our True Crime Podcast. Our True Crime Podcast is an OTC production.